Welcome to The Good Goddess Show, a weekly podcast for women who are fed up, are feeling bloated and tired. I'm your host, Kezia Hall, holistic nutritionist and all-around health geek. Let's dive in to the show. So today on the podcast, we are looking at optimal nutrition to help support your thyroid. So if you know or suspect you have a thyroid issue, whether you're hypo, hyper, whether you have thyroid antibodies, what I'm going to be going through today is four kind of nutritional principles that can really help support you as you work on really optimizing and sorting out your thyroid. So that's what I'm going to be looking at today. It's going to be pretty juicy, some really practical tips I'm looking at. I'm basically pretending that you have walked into my virtual clinic and you've told me you have a thyroid issue. These are some of the basic nutritional steps I would get you to make to help really reduce the inflammation going on in your body and really help support your thyroid, which is fun. I love talking about thyroid. I haven't realized I hadn't done a podcast on this for ages. And actually, when I'm meeting with clients each week, it always comes up. And I think the amount of test thyroid panels I've ran on clients is like phenomenal. I was looking at my test like lab dashboard thing the other day. I was like, I think I've ran like, I don't know, 40 thyroid tests in the last probably 6 months or so. So some of them will be my own. I always check in with my own thyroid as well. But that is what we're looking at today. But how are you doing before we dive in? How are you getting on? Are you enjoying hanging out with people in a nice socially distanced fashion? I have definitely been enjoying seeing people, and my son has been loving it. I think mid-lockdown he was getting a bit like, oh guys, and just you and dad, really? Just us. So he's been playing with cousins and friends and just loving life as a nearly 2-year-old. He's nearly two, guys. He'll be two in September. And I'm thinking of already planning out his birthday cake. I think it might be a Hey Dougie cake, because for his first birthday party, he was not bothered about cake at all. He just didn't care. Whereas I know this birthday, he's kind of, you know, I've schooled him in the ways of cake, which I hadn't done, you know, in those first 6 months of weaning. Whereas now I know he's going to stuff his face with that thing. So I'm thinking chocolate Hey Dougie type cake. For those of you that aren't in the UK, Hey Dougie is a kids TV program by a big dog who goes woof woof. Love it. So anyway, that's what's been happening here. Otherwise, I've been working with some new clients, which has been great, and working with older clients who I've been working with for a while and watching them make progress, which is so fun. Been running more tests. I got some stool test results through this week, and I've literally just started working with a client. And so while the test results showed lots of imbalances going on in their gut, it was really positive for that client to just see, oh my gosh, I'm not crazy. I'm not making these things up. There's actually quite a lot going on in my gut. So that was a real, you know, like a weird positive, if that makes sense. Whereas other clients telling me they're sleeping better, their joint pain is disappearing, just a lot of good stuff. I've had one client who's got a lot of quite severe digestive issues going on, and we've finally been able to reintroduce foods that they can tolerate, which is really exciting and a really good sign, because they've been on a bit of an elimination diet for a while. So yeah, it's just been fun. And I've also been working on a couple of secret projects as well, which I will tell you about in due course, about some stuff that's going to be heading to you end of August, September time. So do make sure you're on my email list and you get my regular emails, because you don't want to miss out on those and those kind of fun projects that are coming to you soon. Otherwise, yeah, that's been life here pretty much. I've been binge watching Say I Do on Netflix. It's made me cry. Just very emotional watching all these people get married. I think that's kind of I think the producers of the program are like, let's try and make as many people cry as possible. So I've been doing that and just generally working, parenting. My son's nursery opens next week. Woohoo! Which is exciting. He's not been at nursery, what, since March? And it's going to happen. I'm excited. So that is my big, exciting life updates. Also, if you are thinking you want to work with me, the way that you get started with that is head over to my website, click the Work With Me page, and book a call, and we can just chat. It's so much easier if we just chat through things, can chat in person on Zoom, and just see what's going to work for you. So I only take on a couple of clients each month, but book your call, and we can just have a nice chat. Okay, let's get on with today's show. Nutrition for your thyroid. That is what we're looking at today. I think it's been a little while since we talked about thyroid in this podcast, but it's something I talk with every week with clients. It always comes up in various forms with new clients that I start working with, where they either come to me and they know they have a thyroid imbalance, they've worked with an endocrinologist and their GP and they know that, or they maybe have a strong suspicion that they might have thyroid issues and they've been refused thorough testing. And that's kind of what we get started on together. So what I'm going to talk about today is how, again, like I do with lots of these podcasts, I'm just imagining you kind of entering into my virtual clinic and you're telling me either you know you have a thyroid issue or you really suspect, we strongly suspect you have one and maybe we're just waiting on some test results. What ways can you eat that can really help support your thyroid, whether you have hyperthyroidism, meaning your thyroid is overactive, whether you have hypothyroidism and your thyroid is underactive, or whether you have this more autoimmune component to it of Hashimoto's that often gets called, meaning that you have your immune system is creating antibodies that attack your thyroid gland itself. So I'm going to talk about some general nutritional principles and lifestyle shifts to make that whichever one of these things you have, actually these can all really impact it for the benefit. And I know that you might be like, yeah, but hyperthyroidism, because it's really different to hypothyroidism and can have slightly different symptoms. And yes, it can. And so in other aspects, you do need to treat and look at, and obviously your doctor will treat hyperthyroidism and hypothyroidism quite differently in terms of medications. But from my holistic nutritionist perspective, if we're starting looking at diet, actually what we're focusing on for both conditions, and all three conditions, is really about reducing inflammation. And so that means some of these dietary principles can actually relate whichever of the thyroid imbalances you may have. Now, when it comes to specific supplementation and protocols and those kinds of things, sometimes it can differ a bit. But I have to say, in working with clients, when I'm working on a program to really optimize and support their thyroid and to really support any other medical treatment they're having towards their thyroid, I have to say a lot of the time, whether it's whichever of the conditions is going on, often the protocols look relatively similar, because from my perspective, you know, I don't treat diseases. That's not what I do. But I look at really optimizing and reducing inflammation, supporting gut health, and really supporting the whole system of the body so that your thyroid feels really, really supported and can work really optimally. So let's dive on in. Now, before we go into this and get into some of the details, and I've got about four nutritional principles that can really help with thyroid issues. And if you listen to this and you're like, because you definitely don't have a thyroid problem, these are actually some great principles generally around reducing inflammation and just an anti-inflammatory approach. So if you have joint issues or any other kind of inflammation going on in your body, these principles can be really helpful across the board. Also, just to note that it does require a bit of trial and error, these kinds of things. So say you come to me and your thyroid is overactive and it's quite high, you've just had labs run, you've been working with an endocrinologist, maybe you've started on some medication, or maybe you are pausing and waiting. Sometimes I have clients that decide to make lifestyle and dietary changes before they dive into medication, which is a discussion they often have with their doctors and decide for themselves. It's really important that we realize with our bodies, whilst I'm going to be outlining four principles, we're all different, you know, that old phrase that we learn at school, but it's so true. And this idea of trial and error and really getting to know your body and figure out what causes inflammation for you is a really, really useful thing. And that's why I like to run lots of functional lab tests with clients and those kind of things, because I can get really tailored data essentially from their body. But you can start to gather data for yourself. So I might share these general principles, but you might know of a specific food that I don't talk about where you just are like, Kezia, I know I feel grim after X, Y, and Z. Like, I just know it. I know it's maybe a supposedly healthy food, or that it should be okay, but you don't feel great when you eat it. Well, then that means something. Just because you don't read about it in a book or listen to it in a podcast, the most important information you can gather is not actually from other people, it's from your own body. That's the most important information you can gather. Now, the art is then understanding and translating that information so that you know what it means, that interpretation. But the most important data you can collect is not just reading every thyroid book under the sun, although that can be really helpful, and I'll maybe mention a couple of authors that I like. It's not necessarily listening to every podcast about your specific condition. It's actually getting really good at listening to your own body. Okay? So if you have just walked into my virtual office and you're like, Kezia, I've just been told my TSH level is 9.6 and what can I do around what I'm eating to help my thyroid? Well, the first thing and the first principle that I'll talk about, which probably isn't going to be a major shocker to you, is first you want to really address and assess and deal with your relationship with sugar. Specifically refined sugar, because obviously sugars are a form of carbohydrate, and carbohydrate is in fruit, it's in vegetables, it's in potatoes, it's in whole grains, as well as cakes, biscuits, and sugar. So if we're getting really pernickety about it and we're talking about sugar, most foods have something that will become glucose within the blood, apart from fat, essentially. Protein, your body can actually break it down and it can become glucose in the blood if need be, and obviously any carbohydrate, whether vegetable, whole grain, biscuit, pastry, table sugar, syrup, celery, even has a very small amount of carbohydrate in there. So when we're talking about sugar, I'm specifically meaning refined, so processed sugars, your white table sugars, your syrups. And a lot of the time it's the sugar that you find in more processed foods. Or if you make all your food from scratch, the sugar like your cane sugar that you would add to baking and all of those kinds of things. So that's the first place you really want to begin, just because we know that sugar really impacts the body in various different ways. And one way that you can really help to reduce inflammation to help your thyroid is to address that relationship. Now, the reason that it can be really helpful to do is that most people in general, when they come to me, are eating a diet that's very high in carbohydrates. And for some people, not everyone, but for some people, that can really contribute to an imbalance in their insulin management. Now, if you have an imbalance of your insulin management, often known as blood sugar, then this can actually create a lot of inflammation and stress in the body. And it really doesn't help your thyroid, your energy, your mental health, your sex hormones, so many different things. So a really great place to look and to deal with that is actually to look at, okay, how much refined and processed sugars am I having in my day? So a great way of doing this is to keep a food diary, or even just to think, okay, yesterday, how many sugary things did I have? And that's what I would do to begin with, is assess and count up how many kind of portions of food did you have where there was some refined sugar added. And that's the first place to begin. Now, obviously, things like fruit and honey and dates and maple syrup are all more natural forms of sugars. They don't come from sugar cane, the plant sugar cane, but they are obviously very high in things like fructose and glucose and those kinds of things. So the next step with sugar is, once someone has addressed their refined sugar, or sometimes I get clients coming to me and they've already dealt with refined sugar, they don't really have much refined sugar in their diets at all. And the only sources of sweetness are more natural sweetening things like fruit, maple syrup, raw honey, xylitol, coconut sugar, those kinds of things. But that can still be something you need to address, again, because all of those things are still glucose forming in the blood. You want to make sure that you're finding what I call your carbohydrate tolerance. Now, this is different for everyone, and this is basically a fancy way of saying you need to find out how much carbohydrate, how much sugar you need to feel really good, and how much is too much for you, how much promotes inflammation. And this is different for all of us. Some people need a diet that's really rich in more kind of complex carbohydrates, and they can really tolerate that well, and it doesn't upset their insulin management. Other people actually, even just to, you know, even if they had something like three pieces of fruit a day, that would be too much sugar essentially for them. So that's kind of the next stage. So when it comes to sugar, I like to look at it in two stages, because otherwise if you try and do this all at once, it's totally overwhelming and chances are you'll give up. And the best thing to do with this is to make lifestyle changes, not some faddy thing. That's the best thing that's going to make the biggest difference to your thyroid, is that you make consistent lasting change. So the first thing you want to do is just look, okay, how much refined sugar is in my diet? Is there also I'd include artificial sweeteners in this. So maybe you're using Splenda or you drink Diet Cokes a lot of the time. Maybe you have a lot of pasta sauces or bread. Shop-bought bread often has sugar in it. Maybe you have some chocolate. Maybe there's some biscuits or cakes at work. Maybe you make your own cakes, but you add sugar to them. Maybe you have sugar in your tea, in your coffee. Maybe you have cereal that has sugar in. A lot of cereal has it in. Maybe you have jam on toast. Like all of these things, just really looking at where are the different sources of refined sugar as stage one. And if you kind of, I'm good with that. I'm really mindful of how much refined sugar I have in my diet. Then that's when you want to assess, okay, how much natural sweetness am I having in my diet? And is it making me feel good? And am I overeating on natural sources of sweetness? So you just like you can binge on chocolate, you can also binge on fruit and dates, because it's about that sugar craving. It's about the mentality. So it's actually a lot more about the mindset and the mentality towards the food than the food itself. So that's another thing to assess. And I could probably do a whole podcast just on that topic, to be fair. But we'll kind of move on a little bit quickly from that. But sugar is the first one. And that I would say that would go with any inflammation, any condition you're trying to deal with in your body, whether it's a major diagnosis of something, whether it's IBS, whether you just want to give a bit more energy. Doing this kind of two-stage sugar process can be really helpful. Number one, looking and assessing how much refined sugar there is in your diet and trying to remove it. And number two, then finding your right balance of natural sweetness in terms of what makes you feel good, what helps your energy, what helps your thyroid, what helps your weight, all of these kinds of things. And the reason we look at this is not because sugar is evil. Like, I'll put my hands up and say, I do eat refined sugar. You know, I like to go out and have a coffee and a brownie sometimes. Not that I've done that because we've been in lockdown, but you know, I used to like doing that. I like on my birthday to have a birthday cake. I don't want an apple with a candle in it. I want a real life chocolate birthday cake. So I do have refined sugar in my life, but it's not a daily occurrence. It's not something that I have a lot of, and I'm really mindful of when my amount starts to creep up. The way I typically have refined sugar the most is probably in chocolate. So I normally eat 85% dark chocolate. So there is a small amount of refined sugar in that, but I'm totally fine with that. So that's probably the most regular source of refined sugar that I have. So you want to do that with refined sugar and then really assess how much natural sweeteners are good for you. And by that, I mean fruit, even certain starchy vegetables like sweet potato, those kinds of things, or even high carbohydrate foods that are like rice, pasta, bread, those kinds of things. Because for some of you, you'll probably be able to eat high amounts of that and your blood sugar is fine. But for others of you, those foods could be spiking a real blood sugar imbalance and causing a lot of inflammation and stress in your body, potentially. So that's the first thing you want to deal with. The next thing we want to look at in terms of principles, dietary principles that can really help reduce inflammation and therefore support your thyroid, is looking at gluten and dairy. So gluten, especially when it comes to the autoimmune component of thyroid issues, when you have thyroid antibodies, there's some good research around gluten contributing to the increase of that antibody status. So, and there's other research, not as much as as we have around looking at the autoimmune thyroid issue, but there is research that shows if you have a thyroid issue, potentially gluten is not the best for you. Or at the very least, you should have a period of time where you have no gluten and see if it improves your markers, see if it improves your hormone levels and how you feel, at the very least. Now, everyone is different. So I do know people that have tried going gluten-free. Maybe they have Hashimoto's. And when they introduce, you know, whole food-based versions of gluten, like, you know, homemade sourdough bread, actually it doesn't affect their antibodies. And for other people, it does. But in general, again, looking at these general principles, gluten is a big one. So I'd probably say that is, after sugar, is an absolute must that you must try at least for ideally 2 or 3 months, just to see, so that you can maybe run your labs again, check in and see how you feel and if it's making a difference. Because also the thing is, you might ditch gluten and not feel any different, but your blood work might change. So that's another thing, because everyone's expecting when they ditch any sort of food or gluten or whatever it is, that they'll wake up in 2 days, and 2 days after ditching gluten, they'll be like, oh my goodness, everything in my life has changed. I feel so much better. The sun is shining. It's like a Disney movie. I'm going to sing at the start of the day. You know, that's what people are expecting secretly. And that's not often how people feel. You might ditch gluten and just feel the same for 1 or 2 months. But if there's a shift in your blood work, then we know you are reducing some inflammation, which is really, really helpful. And it might take time for you to feel the benefit of that dietary change in terms of the day-to-day, if that makes sense. So gluten, really important. Dairy, I think there's less research around dairy and thyroid issues specifically from what I've looked. And obviously I'm not an extensive researcher. I'm more of a practical practitioner, but I have looked into research a little bit, and I don't see as much stuff specifically around dairy and thyroid issues, but there is lots of research around dairy and other inflammatory conditions and autoimmune conditions, and there is a bit around thyroid and dairy as well. But it's something I generally find is quite inflammatory to a lot of people, especially cow's milk. If you just buy bog standard milk from the corner shop, I would say that's got, milk has got the potential of being a really healthy food, but for most people, it's a really inflammatory food. And I know that's confusing because we like to label food as good and bad. Dairy is a great source of nutrients. It can be a good source of protein and healthy fats. But so it has that potential. But for most people, it's just actually going to be promoting inflammation. It can be mucus forming. It can irritate the gut lining. It can affect your sinuses, your immune system, and therefore is one of the first things you want to deal with, or at least assess and experiment with thyroid issues. So again, like gluten, something you want to remove for a good period of time and just see if you feel better or see if your blood work improves. So those would be the first two things: sugar, gluten, dairy. And with when you're eliminating any food, it's really important to remember that you focus on whole food based alternatives. So the world now that we live in is a lot more clued up about gluten free and dairy free. So you can find gluten and dairy free labeled anything at the shop. But often that's really highly processed. So just to encourage you and remind you, this doesn't mean you want to just start eating tons of gluten free bread at, excuse me, dairy-free cheese and all of that sort of stuff. Really make the processed food alternatives that you consume, keep them to an absolute minimal. So ideally you would just be having maybe a dairy-free milk as your kind of processed dairy kind of foods. And then you're not, that's it. You're not trying, you're not eating dairy-free cheese every day or all these other things all the time. So really try and keep the processed foods to a minimal. Same with gluten. Don't want to try and be eating tons of gluten-free bread all the time. You might want to make your own gluten-free bread and then you know exactly what's in it. But again, keep the processed foods down to a minimum, because the whole point of reducing foods is to reduce inflammation. Some of these processed foods can be quite inflammatory in themselves. Next principle that we have is probably more specific to thyroid issues. And for some people, this isn't an issue. And for other clients I've worked with, this is something we need to be quite intentional about. And that is looking at protein. So making sure you're eating adequate amounts of protein in your diet is also really, really helpful from an insulin management perspective, but also a thyroid perspective, because your thyroid is a gland. And it makes hormones. That's what glands do in the body. That's their job. You have lots of glands in the body, and their main job is to make hormones. And for the thyroid hormone, the key ingredients of the hormones that it makes on a really basic, just keeping things super simple here, is it makes hormones with iodine and tyrosine. So tyrosine is an amino acid that then gets used to create kind of bonds with iodine. And then we have this hormone substance that then gets transported around the body. So tyrosine is an amino acid and comes from protein. Now, tyrosine is a non-essential amino acid, so meaning the body can make it itself. But when there's thyroid imbalance of any kind, you want to make sure that your protein intake and your protein digestion is really is doing good. Otherwise, if you're not intaking enough protein, you might be struggling with tyrosine potentially. Or if you're maybe eating enough protein, but you're not digesting it, then actually you're not going to be getting all these essential amino acids that really help the body to heal and repair. So I give you a specific example of tyrosine, which is a non-essential amino acid that helps to support your thyroid. But amino acids that come from protein in general, their general job is healing, repairing, making hormones. They're really, really essential things. And especially as you get older, the older you get, the more protein that you need to stay healthy. But also the older you get, also the less effective you are at digesting protein. So the digestion of protein is really dependent on your stomach acid. And I would say 90% of the people I work with are probably poor digesters of protein. And this affects so many things. It affects your ability to make serotonin, it affects your thyroid, it affects your skin repair, it affects your bones, it affects so many things, your mood, your mental health, lots and lots of things. So the next thing that I would then do, say you're like, Kezia, right, I've dealt with sugar, feeling good, I'm doing my dairy and gluten-free experiment for 3 months, doing good. The next thing you want to look at is protein. And point A is, are you eating enough pure sources of protein? So ideally you want some protein with every meal. Now, if your average day is, say, let's say you have avocado on toast, and then for lunch you have a couscous salad with some veggies and feta cheese. And then although if you're gluten-free, you won't be having that. But anyway, let's just say that's what you're eating. And then for dinner, you maybe have veggie curry, for example. Your actual protein intake of that day, that sounds like a pretty healthy day of eating, but your protein intake for that day is very small. And you're not really having proper protein with each meal. So if you have feta cheese at lunch and you've got your veggies and your carbs, again, you've just got fat and carbs there. Breakfast, you've got fat and carbs primarily. Dinner time, you've probably just got carbs. So being intentional about having some source of protein with every meal is really important. Now, this is obviously more difficult if you're vegetarian, but there's lots of great vegetarian sources of protein, eggs, tempeh, tofu, some nuts. You get some great vegetarian protein powders. Those can be really, really helpful. If you are a meat eater or a pescatarian, do make sure that you get as high a quality meat as you can afford. And if you're buying fish, that the fish you have is not farmed. So it's wild ocean caught fish, not farmed salmon, because their most nutrients are in the wild fish that we have. And if you eat meat, then make sure, again, that you're really going for organic, grass-fed meat as much as you can afford. Really, it's really helpful. If you're going to prioritize anything, if you are a meat eater and you're going to prioritize anything in your diet in terms of, and your budget in terms of organic, I would really recommend, if you only do one thing, that you do animal products as organic and grass-fed and go for as best quality as you can afford. And actually, if you're willing to go with some cheaper cuts and not just eat, you know, if you want organic chicken breasts, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. But if you're happy to maybe have more mince or make your chicken broth, or what do I buy a lot of the time? I buy like minute steaks. They're pretty cheap for a stir fry. I buy mince. I often get chicken carcass bones for bone broth. I do a lot of tinned fish of sardines and mackerel and anchovies because they're all wild, but also very cheap. So there is really cheap ways around of doing it if you're willing to just not eat essentially chicken breast every night, because that will be expensive. To get some good quality, well-raised, ethical chicken breasts, it's probably going to cost you about £8. Whereas you can do, there's lots of other alternatives there. But part A is making sure you're eating enough protein. Now, some you might be, and this, I'm not saying you need to go protein mad and have protein shakes after every meal, every workout. It can be really simple. Just think about your meal And think about, where's the protein in this meal? Really simple. So, for example, say we took that diet, that example diet I gave you before, if someone's having toast and avocado with breakfast, you could instead have scrambled eggs on toast. Instead, there we go, simple switch. And you could still have the avocado because there's lots of healthy fats and carbs in the avocado. Lunchtime, you might still have your couscous salad with some vegetables, but maybe you add in a bit of fish or a bit of tempeh, or you add in some leftover cooked chicken from the night before or whatever it is. Then for dinner time, you might be having a veggie curry. Maybe you add some tempeh onto that or some organic tofu. So you just add a bit of protein into that. It's just about adding the protein. But then the next thing, part B of this point, is then digesting protein. Now, this is something it's best to work with someone around, because some of the supplements that you can use, there can be certain contraindications around it. So I'm not going to talk about specific supplements here, but digesting your protein can be is really, really important. And it affects, again, your thyroid, but also your mood, your energy, so many things. So that's part B of that one. And some great simple digestion tips is, number one, don't drink a lot with your meals. And I don't just mean alcohol, I mean anything, because you dilute your stomach acid and digestive secretion. So try and have small sips of water. Don't drink like a whole pint right as you sit down to eat. You want to stay hydrated in between meals primarily. Another things that you can do is adding a little bit of raw apple cider vinegar. So your small glass of water with dinner, you might have a little bit of raw apple cider vinegar in there. That can be really helpful as well. Okay, the fourth nutritional principle that can help with thyroid issues is, if say you've done all of the above and working together and you're like, Kezia, I do feel a bit better. My thyroid feels a bit better. I've maybe just checked with my blood work, but it's still a little bit high and it's maybe not shifting as much as we would like. Then the next things we'd want to look at is more specific foods that could be causing inflammation. So I find with thyroid, things like corn, soy, nightshades, sometimes high FODMAP foods if there's other stuff going on, because it's important to know with thyroid conditions, some people, it's just their thyroid. That's the only thing that's going on. But I would say most of the people that I end up working with anyway, they have thyroid issues. They also have some sort of digestive issue or digestive infection. There's also maybe some skin issues, another autoimmune condition going on, a history of stress or trauma or all different things. They might have poor sleep. They might have had a pregnancy and newborns around recently. Like, there's different factors going on that also are contributing to this thyroid picture. Your thyroid being off or having some sort of thyroid issue is often the result of lots of different kind of lifestyle, genetic, body, nutrition, environmental factors, in my opinion. So there can be lots of other things going on. But if someone isn't making the progress we would want, then that's when we would start to get more narrowed down. Now, this can just sound like a big, long list of foods to exclude. And that's not how I like to approach it with clients, because you want, if you just focus on restricting foods, you can create a really unhealthy relationship and a really stressful relationship to food and to your diet and to your body even. So you do have to manage these things. That's why it's good to work with someone, because honestly, I can't tell you how many times people have come to me and they're like, Kezia, I've been gluten dairy free for 3 years. And then I read that grains were inflammatory, so I stopped grains, so I don't eat grains. And I also don't have corn, I also don't have soy, I also don't have nightshades, I also avoid high FODMAP foods, I also avoid sugar, I also don't have alcohol, I also don't have coffee and caffeine, I also don't have nuts, I also don't have seeds. And I'm like, what the heck do you eat? And their mentality is, and it's not helping them. That's the main thing. You know, if you have to really restrict your diet, the idea is that you really restrict your diet for a short period of time. Now, I have a couple of clients at the moment where we really have massively restricted their diet because of the severity of health issues that were going on with them. And they were up for it. And they came to me with an existing healthy-ish relationship with food. But I don't keep them on a restricted diet. And if they don't make progress with that restricted diet, we change. Whereas I often have people coming to me where they've just had tons of restriction in their diet. They've kept it that way for several years, but they haven't made any progress. So they think, oh my goodness, I've not made progress. The answer is to restrict more food. So I'll get rid of grains, I'll get rid of legumes, I'll get rid of because, and then they'll just keep at that. Then they still might not make progress. And so they think, right, And the answer is to restrict more food. And that just is when things get so dangerous and it becomes a really slippery slope. People can lose too much weight. You can just imagine. Now, I know that can sound really counter to what I've just been talking about how these inflammatory foods are. So you've got to do this process and figure out these foods. You've got to do that detective work and figure out what is causing inflammation in your body. Then you might need to remove a lot of food and be restricted for a short period of time in order for your body to heal. But the idea is that you then build resiliency, you heal your body, you have other things going on that are helping your body to rebalance so that you can then start to reintroduce some of those foods when your body is ready. Does that make sense? So nutritional principle number four is actually getting more nuanced around specific things. This might be the only time actually with a client that I might run like some sort of food intolerance testing or gut microbiome testing potentially. If they are doing a really great job, but they're not making the progress, then I might test and be like, oh, right, you actually really don't tolerate broccoli very well. And you've been eating loads of broccoli because it's really good for you. You know, that's the only time that I might look at doing that kind of testing, because often I don't really recommend food intolerance testing all that much. I think it can be helpful, but often people, I mean, ideally if you came to me and you were like, Kezia, I have a limitless budget for testing, I would throw in a food intolerance test. But from a strategic and budgetary perspective, people often have a set budget of what they want to spend on lab tests. And so I often pick the most useful one. And yes, food intolerance tests might be helpful in a way. A stool test, a thyroid test, a hormone test is going to be way more useful in the long run, if that makes sense. So those are the four nutritional principles to help your thyroid. I hope that has been helpful. If you have any questions about what I'm talking or have talked about, then you can head over to Instagram and find me at Supernaturally Healthy, or join my free Facebook community, where if you go into Facebook, if you just search Kezia Hall in the groups, you'll see Kezia Hall group pop up and you can join me there. And that's where I kind of hang out in the week. So I hope this has been helpful. If you want to know more, then head over to keziahall.com. You can find the show notes there. And if you are like, Kezia, I've done all the things you've said and my thyroid is still buggered, then maybe it's time for us to work together and have a bit of a chat. So to find out more about that, you can go to the Work With Me section on my website. So head to keziahall.com, click the Work With Me page on the menu, and then book a call. And we can just chat about, okay, what would it look like to work together? How could we help get your body and your thyroid and your energy a little bit on the happier side so that you can just feel good when you wake up in the morning, which would be nice, wouldn't it? Okay, have an amazing day. Thank you for joining me. Let me know if you've listened to the podcast, share it with friends, leave me a review if you haven't done so already, and I will see you next week.